This is WHFR Dearborn. Time now for the WHFR Journal, the new WHFR Journal for Friday, December 14th, 2007. And since, we're sort of in a holiday period here for the rest of December, instead of our usual northern exposure theme, which is also appropriate with Michigan winter approaching, we're going to have a little taste of music from the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, although politically correct because this is their rendition of The Spirit of the Season from the movie The Polar Express.
Thank you.
There we go. That's the Mormon Tabernacle Choir beginning one of our, probably three holiday special editions of the new WHFR Journal, public affairs, local news that you can use. Local news, the things that are right next door that matter to you most. That's what we talk about here each Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. now, a new time, or available after 2 p.m. For the new show each week from our internet website, WHFR.FM is our website address. That's right, .fm, not .net or .org, .fm. Easy to remember, isn't it? WHFR.fm. Just scroll down on the page to the WHFR Journal, and you can click on Listen Now for the last show, or we're archived back several weeks in case you missed something that's happening. My name is Jay Koronek. I'm station advisor here at WHFR and host for the new WHFR Journal each Friday. Let me explain why we chose the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. It was a CD that we received in the station. We get a lot of holiday-themed CDs, and I believe we do get the Mormon Tabernacle Choir each year. This is on their own label, the Mormon Tabernacle Choir label. And they send it around for various public relations reasons. They're always a very entertaining vocal group. And, in fact, our expert on vocal things, as my co-host, Kristen Risbeck, is in the studio today. And she's going to talk about her knowledge about the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, if any. Good morning, Kristen. How are you?
Good morning, Jay. Or should I say good afternoon, remember?
Yeah, it's now the new time, yes. And I'm still, it's morning, yes. It's morning to me, you know.
Oh, I wish it could be morning to me. I'm not a morning person, so 1 o'clock would be a great morning start for me.
Okay, as a person that had a choral arts show here, and maybe we'll be returning with that each week in the future as your time permits, and your own performing background, what do you think of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir and their abilities?
I think they're a fantastic choral group. Uh-huh. They've performed just internationally. They've been all over the place. Right. I'm trying to remember who replaced who their new director is, but I can't think of who it is. I'm a little offbeat since I haven't been doing my show. Choir is led by Craig Yesop.
Mm-hmm. We just started with the Spirit of the Season, which is the
so
title
wonderful.
Of their CD here for this year's Christmas collection, which is also the theme from the Polar Express, that animated film from a couple of years ago. It starred Tom Hanks as the major voice, and they did the virtual reality thing with him, the motion capture of his body. So anytime you saw his animated conductor, for example, or the other characters that he portrayed moving to the left or right or his head, that was actually him in a blue suit with dots all over it that they did motion capture to try to make the animation a little more real, which I didn't think it worked anyway. But
I thought it was creepy.
Yeah, I'd rather just have seen the live-action version with some CG effects added, you know.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of creepy.
But nonetheless, so it was a politically correct thing. The reason I brought this up, Kristen, you'll just have to grin and bear this, is I wanted to feature Jack Lessenberry's article from this week. Normally we don't talk about national issues too much as they involve Dearborn, but his article this week, his editorial opinion, was about Mike Huckabee. And he's been in the news recently, and especially in terms of what he said about Mormonism, supposedly an offhand comment, which is going to be put out in great detail in this Sunday's New York Times Magazine. They did a story on Huckabee and his opinions about things. Well, here's what Lessenberry said, and I don't know if you remember, I had some comments about the Republican presidential debate mm-hmm. that was here in early October this year that you folks played when you and our news director, Susan Morrell, covered the show for me while I was gone. And kind of interesting that Lessenberry thinks that Huckabee is actually a potential, very, very valid potential Republican candidate. Here's what he said. We just can't have a president named Huckabee. It's a quote he's giving here. You just can't, unquote. My brightest student proclaimed last week. What are those people thinking, she said, giggling. They aren't, I started to tell her, and then I remembered another moment and another girl in a graduate class more than 30 years ago. And this person said to him, the American people are not going to elect a peanut farmer named Jimmy who sounds like he should be on Hee Haw. the southern accent thing, of course. And in fact, I had someone say to me, because I said, well, why not Mike Huckabee in president? He said, no one with the name of Huckabee would ever be president, as if that was too weird a name. Although there was a film, an indie film that was somewhat popular called I Heart Huckabee. In other words, I love Huckabee, which may be his indie claim to fame, even. But anyway, as Lessenberry says, they did elect the peanut farmer, as you may remember if you're old enough or you ever had a history class in high school. And now, out of the blue in the endless dreary debates, a guy nobody ever heard of 6 months ago named Huckabee has suddenly surged to the top of the GOP pack. Of course, for those people that don't remember history, who was that president, Christine?
Don't go there.
Jimmy Carter. Okay, see? Yeah. See how smart we are around the station here? We remember. We studied in high school. Anyway, who is Mike Huckabee, he
briefly
asked. he is the 52-year-old Christian fundamentalist Southern Baptist preacher who plays bass guitar in a rock and roll band at times and idolizes Keith Richards, that druggy old so-and-so.
Seriously idolizes him? Yeah. That's what he's quoted as saying that. Okay.
Yeah. Of the Rolling Stones. He said that one of the highlights, this is Huckabee, one of the highlights of being governor of Arkansas was pardoning Richards for a 30-year-old reckless driving conviction. That was one of his highlights. Okay.
Wow.
Felt so proud to relieve him of that burden. Not that he ever went back to Arkansas after that, but Keith Richards, of course. He grew up in, this is
I can't even believe he's still alive.
Yeah, he can't either. He grew up, he said that, you know, I can't believe I'm still alive. And all the things I did and injustice. Anyway.
Well, that's probably why he's still alive. Why do I sound so buzzy?
It's just the atmosphere, I guess. He grew up in, no, I didn't make this up, says Lessenberry, Hope, Arkansas, the same tiny Arkansas town that Bill Clinton came from. And like Bill Clinton, Mike Huckabee was poor. Unlike Clinton, he was no Rhodes Scholar, going instead to Wachita Baptist University, getting married at 18. He does not seem to have had an eye for other women, though he certainly did for food. His son once said that he couldn't walk into Taco Bell without spending more than $7. But when the doctors told him he had diabetes 4 years ago, he lost 110 pounds lickety-split. Later, he lived for a while in a trailer. He called it a triple-wide. It's on the grounds of the Arkansas governor's mansion while it was being renovated. This is, by the way, why journalists mostly don't think about writing novels. Real life is far, far stranger. Hard as you try, you just can't make this stuff up. That's Lessenberry's comment. Like most human beings, he goes on, Michael Dale Huckabee is a bundle of contradictions, which seems to add to his appeal. When it comes to science, he's about as backward as William Jennings Bryan was during the Scopes trial. He doesn't believe in evolution, and thinks the Earth may be only 6,000 years old. Of course, that's before my time, although some people think not. Anyway, he opposes all abortion and has angrily denied that man is a primate. So there, however he defines it. But he also clearly and sincerely cares about the poor. He raised taxes in Arkansas again and again to try and do something for the least advantaged. He raised taxes to build new roads and to try to provide some better services. Huckabee fought to put all of Arkansas's share of the tobacco settlement money into the state's health care system. Compare that to the worthless scuts in the Michigan legislature, says Lessenberry, not holding back much of his feelings here, who sold our share off in May at less than 50 cents on the dollar to avoid having to balance the budget. That's an interesting...
That's an interesting way to do that.
Well, I don't remember the series of events, actually, but I know that they did do that, that we didn't get the full payout because I think what happened was we wanted the money all at once, and the tobacco settlement was over a period of years. So to get the payment now, you could only take half of it, and that's it. You wrote off the other half.
So in order to avoid the paperwork.
Yeah, well, often people do that. It's a settlement, even an advertiser, TV that say, you got a settlement, but you need all the money now. We'll work it out for you. They work it out. They take their cut, but you only get a percent, whether it's 50% or whatever, of the total amount. But at least you get it all at that time rather than having to wait over a period of years. So that's what Michigan, I think, did. In order to help with the budget crisis, they took all the settlement money they could get, which was only 50%.
And then blew it?
Well, you know, why are we in debt?
Because where is it now? Yeah.
Not because of health care. We're in debt for all kinds of other reasons.
Right.
You know, so, but Huckabee applied that over the years to pay for a better health care system for Arkansas, apparently. Huckabee fought to put all of its share. Okay, there. Huckabee even seems to think that we need some form of national health care. Amazing for a Republican, although some form, and can be very eloquent at denouncing those right-to-lifers who aren't interested in doing anything to help the babies that they forced to be born. In other words, he's really an old-fashioned Southern populist, one who has been successful at persuading people that he cares about their problems because he actually does, says Lessenberry. Interestingly, he seems to be doing far better at this than John Edwards, who was just as poor as a child, but went on to become a multimillionaire lawyer, now seen as a man who gets $400 haircuts. Does that mean that Mike Huckabee will be the next president, asks Jack Lessenberry. Not at all. I am not even convinced that he's going to be the Republican nominee for a number of reasons. He still does not have the kind of money Mitt Romney has. Corporate interests are scared to death that he really does want to do something for the poor and disadvantaged. They'll spend a lot to stop him. Also, flash-in-the-pan come-from-nowhere candidates like Huckabee can sometimes do well in places like Iowa and New Hampshire, but seldom have the money or the slates of delegates needed to compete in all the many early primary states. Remember, this whole thing may be, well, decided on February 5th when 20 or so states all vote in what's being called Super Duper Tuesday. Michigan, of course, we vote in January.
It's
the 15th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Plus, the press is still in their early first crush over Mike Huckabee's stage. What will follow quickly is some more intense scrutiny. Now, Lessenberry probably wrote this before, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, when the first straw poll that showed that Huckabee was in the lead among Republican caucus people in Iowa. And that was surprising. Got him a lot of attention this week, and not all positive. But this Lessenberry wrote this before that was revealed, that Huckabee is in the lead, according to a survey, which is not necessarily very scientific, of Republican caucus voters who might vote in the caucus. So it's not actually a primary coming up. I think it's January 3rd. You know, it's a Thursday, but it's in Iowa. It's just among people who are caught. That is, they don't go to the regular polling place. They go to wherever the Republicans say you should show up in order to cast a vote as a Republican. So that's a caucus. Okay. Anyway, he's ahead in that projected vote of just the caucus members, not an official primary. Anyway, it says
it really shouldn't be this difficult.
Well, and I don't think it should be this big a deal about a thing like a party member-only little caucus that most people, well, they all know about in Iowa because it's talked about for a long time, but it's not really an official primary. Anyway, reporters in Arkansas say the Huckabee family was notorious. Here's some of the scrutiny that came up.
Okay.
Notorious, chasing down every loose buck they could, often in blissful disregard of any ethical niceties. When he and his wife Janet renewed their wedding vows, they set up bridal registries at stores like Target so that everybody out there could shower them with presents, you know, even if they couldn't afford the big ones. So they also apparently encouraged gift cards to be given as well, if you don't know what to provide. This is Huckabee, seems to have somewhat of a thin skin, as Matt Tabby of Rolling Stone reports, a real religious nut. But after spending some time with him, Tabby concluded, quote, the fact that he is succeeding in spite of his obvious and undisguised lunacy, this is Rolling Stone, though, I mean, talking about somebody who believes in faith, okay, but still, is a testament to the desperation of the voting public, concluded the Rolling Stone magazine, which is so hungry for a candidate who actually responds to its needs that it may be willing to overlook that he is a whack job. That's Rolling Stone. In other words, though,
okay, can we not overlook that somebody might be a whack job if they're going to be a presidential candidate?
Well, just because they have a strong religious faith doesn't mean they're a whack job. But to Rolling Stone, I think that does.
Oh, okay.
Because everything is decided on their faith primarily rather than other, let's say, more rational or logical means, which principles, which may come into play. But I think this one person at Rolling Stone, the Mike Tabby, that he perhaps draws that conclusion is that somebody whose primary decision-making criteria is based on faith is perhaps a whack job. Anyway,
which we've never seemed to have really quite gotten away from the whole separation of state and church, which I find very interesting because we decided that a long time ago.
Well, we thought we did. I really like, and they did repeat it last week, since Mitt Romney had, I think it was last week, Thursday, his speech about how his religion, his faith, his Mormon faith, reflects on his decisions. But he said it does involve it a lot more than John F. Kennedy said. Kennedy said that, hey, should not even be a question. Yes, I'm Roman Catholic, but that doesn't have anything to do with how I run government, how I'd make decisions. Yes, I have that belief, and everybody's entitled to that, but when it comes to running government, you run government in terms of what's best for the people. And the faith is there, of course, but it's not something that you consider first. It's just all part of your person. Romney, if I may paraphrase him, and I may do a mistake here, but I'll apologize just like Huckabee had to apologize to Romney a couple days ago, and we'll bring that up in a second.
That's the whole point of this, right?
Right, yes, it is. Right. And that's why I played the Mormon Tabernacle Choir at the beginning.
Here, I thought you did that for me.
Oh, yes, oh, just the choir. It. But I wanted your opinion if they were any good singers there, and I guess they are. Of course, they have been for years. Yeah. Anyway, it says, in other words, Huckabee seems to be a member of that endangered species in politics, and this is positive. Lessenberry is saying something positive about Huckabee here. A real person. If you want to know why he may well have a chance, take a look at the candidate who should logically be the Republican nominee, former Massachusetts governor and Detroit native Mitt Romney. He is far more handsome than Huckabee. He speaks very well, is enormously intelligent, has a picture-perfect family, and comes across as an utter robot. I interviewed him in April, says Lessenberry, and have seldom spoken to a more calculating machine. One sincere note that comes across when you talk to Romney is that he really does think he's better than anyone else, period. Remember, I gave him my personal accolade and award in terms of the debate here in Dearborn. He has the best hair. And the best hairdresser. That's Mitt Romney. Oh, there's no doubt. I know I'm going out on a limb there, but that's my feeling about Mitt Romney. Better hair than anyone else running for Republican Party. Although I really like John Edwards' hair. I think his $400 haircuts are bad, actually, but I like his hair. So anybody that has more of the hair than me, I generally like anyway. But okay, just take a look, says Lessenberry, at the interview that Mitt Romney gave the Detroit News. Gordon Trowbridge there, published online last Sunday. Romney was asked about the fact that Huckabee has soared ahead of him in Iowa. I guess it was known last week. Romney, the bionic man, said, that's not to be taken seriously. Quote, with the challenges we face, you need somebody who is smart and analytical. I'm able to take tough issues and analyze them. I like debate, argument, consideration of options. You need to have a deliberative, thoughtful approach. Unquote. Romney's supporters have been worried that the public won't accept a Mormon. The real problem may be, to put it in Star Trek terms, that he is a Vulcan incapable of emotion, human emotion. This is a guy, says Lessenberry further, who put his Irish setter Seamus, or is it Seamus? Seamus is the Irish name, right?
Yes.
He put his Irish setter Seamus in a cage on top of the family car for a 12-hour drive from Boston to Ontario. Ontario, yeah. And then was amazed to discover the terrified dog's excrement flowing down the windows. And what was his reaction, Romney's reaction, to that clear animal torture? He hosed off the car. Yes. Romney is proudly into emotion-free crisis management, says Lessenberry. Yet this is an emotion-laden world in which not everybody can make $250 million as a venture capitalist. Frankly, Lessenberry is finally concluding here, if I were Hillary Clinton, I would be much more worried about running against Mike Huckabee. The venture capitalist of America don't get that, but a lot of other people do, which is why this could be an even more interesting race than we imagined. And that's the opinion of Jack Lessenberry in this week's Metro Times. And, of course, any opinions expressed here in the show, which have already started and may hopefully will continue here on the new WHFR Journal, at our new time of 1 to 2, are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, although it might be possible. I brought this up because since Wednesday, Mike Huckabee's comment to the New York Times writer, and it was for a long story, an in-depth story in the New York Times Magazine, which will come out this Sunday, but the story is already out there on the Internet. And in it, he was asked about the Mormon faith, and of course indirectly Mitt Romney, and he admitted he doesn't know much about it, that the Baptist minister doesn't know much about Mormonism. Now, the man went to college, for Pete's sake. I mean, I know more, apparently, about Mormonism than he does, and I don't even study religion. He made a comment, which has been mentioned, and it's been in the news, folks. If you watch that Fox News channel, he defended himself at length. But he said, I don't know much about Mormonism. Don't they believe that Satan and Jesus were brothers? That's what he said. Now, the larger context...
Okay, wait a minute. This guy is a Baptist...
Baptist minister.
Minister and...
Yeah. Trained in religion. And so he went to college, four-year school, you know, and you would think you'd have some understanding of other religions.
Almost everybody has to take a world religions class when they go to college.
Well,
you know, this
not
depends,
necessarily.
Well, it tends to be a requirement.
If you're a Baptist minister, they probably don't let you study Catholicism or Mormonism.
Well, maybe not, because you might get swayed
right,
from the other
just
side.
Right, one direction here. Let's
There's
go,
education for you.
Well, full speed ahead. I mean, if that's your intent is to become a Baptist minister, then why tell you about the other religions, you know? You just want to be a good, invalid here, somewhat, excellent spokesperson for your religion. And you're not expected to comment much about other religions as a Baptist minister. But it seems incredibly naive or blind that he's blindsided himself to this, because it is the most bigoted comment that many, unfortunately, as I read in the New York Times today, and of course, what do they know, other Christian ministers, evangelicals especially, say about Mormonism. In other words, that and another problem, which for me, again, not as a theologian, I don't see the deal here. The Mormons apparently see God, capital G, and Jesus Christ and the Holy Ghost as three separate entities. And God has a human physical form, although it's immortal. And I don't know where it lives or stays, but
cloud.
It is a physical, human-sized, immortal form. And so that's an interesting entity. I mean, it might be one of those ETs or something, you know, but and I'm just making a joke there. But it's just that can't be accepted by other evangelicals. They see, first of all, the Trinity thing
right.
as three in one and not with a corporeal presence anyplace. So, I mean, that's just theology. I don't know. I mean, you got a Trinity. You got the same God, the same Jesus Christ, the same Holy Spirit. So who cares if they're all in one and have a physical presence or not? I don't think, well, again, for an outsider, I guess I'm kind of Zen Buddhist, but you know, I don't support a formal religion, but I don't consider myself atheist or even agnostic. I mean, I think the great spiritual oneness thing is really means something to me, although I'm not sure about the name and the place and the corporeal thing. But in any event, this other thing is more damning, isn't it? Whether or not Satan and Jesus were brothers, and of course the slur would imply that that makes Jesus less significant because... Isn't he one of the top three, you know?
Okay, well, first of all, though, just on this basis, whether or not he knows about the Mormon religion or not...
They don't see it that way. Well, I just want to say, I'll explain their view of it. They don't see it, Jesus and Lucifer, you know, Satan, as equal at all,
right,
even though
right.
they're all equal pre-mortal entities. Premortal. In other words, they existed from time immemorial, God's mind or whatever. But it would be as damning as to say that Adolf Hitler and George Bush are brothers. Okay? I know they weren't alive at the same time. But, you know, you think, whoa, they're brothers. Geez, what a family must have come out of, the DNA, you know. And actually, Bush has been referred to as doing Hitler-like thing. Well, but anyway, my point is that that's unfair. You know, to say that they're brothers like in the same family. But in terms of all spirits have been created by God and all people, including Kristen and Jay, existed in God's mind way back when, uniquely. And so, of course, in the Mormon belief, well, of course, they're kind of like all similar spirits from time at the beginning. And so the Mormons don't see Satan and Jesus in the same way at all, and they see Jesus as good, and Hitler, of course, That's bad. And it's really unfair for someone who wants to say that about Mormonism, because the negative connotation is there. They don't treat Jesus as well as other Christian religions, and that's just not fair to the Mormon beliefs. And even somebody like myself, who hasn't taken a world religion class and probably knows more about Buddhism than Christianity, I knew that much about the Mormon religion and that connection. So,
okay, can I unleash my harsh opinion here?
Yeah.
Okay, my harsh opinion here is, okay, what an idiot, first of all. Because do I even want to think about having a president who, going into cultural negotiations and contracts with other countries and doing things that he can't even take the time to find out what his opponents for the presidential election, he can't even take the time to find out where they are coming from or what their beliefs are. I don't want some guy like that representing this country going into another country going, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to kill your cow."
Well, how long has he been running against Mitt Romney here? You're right, for months. And,
yeah.
And you'd do your research, you'd find out about their religion.
Even a presidential debate or a presidential candidacy election, you should know everything about what you're going into. Okay, what you're going up against.
Okay, my next point on top of that is, what does he know about Islam?
Yeah.
A president, certainly getting into the world situation today, has to be, someone has to educate him, about a non-Christian religion. But if he's not even familiar with a religion that at least does have Jesus Christ involved in it, how familiar is he with, well, I don't know, Buddhism or Islam or, the other religions in the world that he has to deal with those cultures? So it is somewhat damning that this slipped out,
but you can't let stuff like that slip out.
Well, it's tough.
If you're going to be dealing with situations, especially sensitive situations, mm-hmm. that greatly deal with religions of different countries, you can't let stuff like that slip out.
Now, I want to say something positive here about Mike Huckabee. As you know, if you remember at all my comments from the presidential race, the debate here in Dearborn, where I saw Huckabee and talked to his supporters. I saw him briefly from a distance, but he is extremely articulate, and he seems to be able, like this 3-hour grilling that Fox News did of him, handle himself verbally very, very well. And actually, I agree with Lesson Berry. He seems like a real person. I like him, although he's articulate. That's because he's careful in what he says and articulate. This doesn't seem like him to make a comment like this, but in politics, they say all's fair in love and politics, and by golly, I don't believe all's fair in war, but like torture and all that, but there you go, another opinion on the journal. So I thought he had great potential to get the Republican nomination. That was my conclusion. Of course, the other guy I said had great potential was Brownback, and you know what happened to him. He dropped out a week or so later. The Koronic endorsement, that deep-sixed him. But I said I liked Huckabee best, even though I did a special report on Ron Paul. I said I like Huckabee's presentation. I like his debating style. He seems like a real person. He seems like he's speaking carefully and thoughtfully. And I just said that. And here he does seem to be gaining support. And I think his campaigning style is working, especially in Iowa, which is heavily a Christian state. So this doesn't seem like the kind of thing he would say, but it does raise a real question about him as president, even though a single word or two shouldn't. I don't know if you remember way back, since you weren't born then, Kristen, his dad, George Romney, who was governor of Michigan, made a run for president. Mm. And he was running for the Republican nomination. And in order to understand the Vietnam War that was going on at the time, he took a trip to Vietnam and talked to the military officers and viewed the battlefields. And when he came back, he made a statement that ended his campaign almost immediately. He said, "I was brainwashed." Now, what he meant was, all these military people, all the handlers, you know, all the protection, the government sponsored his trip over. He didn't go as a tourist, you know, there's a war going on.
Right.
That they're basically lying to him. They're shaping the truth. They're not telling the real truth to either him or the American people about what's really going on in Vietnam. But that phrase, the media took it and ran with it. He was brainwashed. Well, if he's so weak-minded that he could be brainwashed,
he shouldn't be president.
He can't be president. Right. Oh, if he can be, I mean, only weak-minded people could be brainwashed, which is not true.
No, that's not true at all.
If you saw the Manchurian candidate, or if you realize what they can do with drugs and torturous indoctrination, almost anybody can be broken and brainwashed. But in fact, the news media and the press, public relations, if you will, they shape public opinion all the time. They did a great job convincing us when Woodrow Wilson was elected in 1914 as a pacifist that would never get us involved in a war in Europe. 2 years later, he had to set up a PR committee called the Creel Committee, we teach this in Intro Telecom, to convince the people that war in Europe was good. Just 2 years after he was elected as a pacifist, all of a sudden, they believed it. It was a massive PR campaign to change the whole opinion of the country that war and involvement in Europe was bad, we should stay out of it forever, to, oh, let's go and die for Europe, because there are bad people there, the Kaiser and the Germans and so on. And it can be done, just like the same, one of the guys that was on that committee, Edward Bernays, Master of Public Relations, 1927, he was approached by the tobacco industry of America, and they said, look, women aren't buying cigarettes. They're not smoking. We're missing out on a fantastic market here. And he said, well, I think I can do something about that. He started a campaign to get cigarettes in movies. Spoke by the movie stars during the big popular movies.
Oh, yeah, they did.
And he paid people, debutantes, to walk during the Easter parade, I think 1927, in New York City, to be photographed with cigarettes in their hands, smoking cigarettes in public. Imagine women smoking cigarettes in public. And today it continues. More women smoke cigarettes than men.
I didn't know that.
And it's increasing even, which is terrible for their health. But the Creel Committee, in 1 year, he had, you know, because of women's liberation, the 1920s, you know, the new equity for women who had the right to vote from 1922 on, it worked. It became associated with feminism and women's equal rights. By golly, I'm going to smoke too. And there wasn't the health scare or the health facts that were out there at all then. And Bernays didn't even know. So, you know, although he makes a great steak sauce, doesn't he? Anyway. but, it's so easy to change public opinion through half-truths and marketing campaigns. And what they knew was true and right before can be changed just that easily. So, of course. But Romney was smart enough to know he had been brainwashed. Most people who are brainwashed don't know it, like taken in by public relations campaigns. They don't realize it until somebody points it out. He knew he had been lied to and they'd shaped the truth. And yet that phrase echoed, oh, he must be weak-minded to be brainwashed. And it was over. All his support was gone. We'll never vote for president. So I think it's unfair, under the pressures of all these reporters, almost 18 hours a day, it's as bad as being hounded by paparazzi. Every single word, whether you're going into the restroom or just first got up in the morning, is going to be reported and analyzed and dissected. I still can't understand his passing along well, Mormonism, don't they believe that Hitler and, not Hitler, Satan and Jesus are brothers? Oh, my God. Unless he was joking. So once again, though,
should him or his campaign manager or whatever should have known everything about the Mormon religion before.
To be fair, I haven't read
any kind of debates.
Exactly. To be fair, I'm going to read the complete New York Times story this weekend, even though it's online now. I haven't read it and see what if there was a context, which is what the media should really do. But I think he's got a lot of potential. He does come across as a real person. Anyone who wants to vote, we do have the press release on that. You only have till this Monday here in Michigan. And remember, the Republican part of the primary, of course I don't have it in front of me, but this Monday the 17th is the last time to register to vote in Michigan. If you wanted to vote on January 15th as a Democrat or Republican, the problem is for the Democrats, most of the major Democratic candidates' names are not on the ballot because they didn't want them there because they didn't want Michigan to have their primary so early. And so you could write in Hillary Clinton. You could write in John Edwards or Barack Obama, but their names won't be there. on the ballot.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Michigan's been punished for that. Now, all the Republican major candidates, they are on that ballot. And you can vote whichever way you want. You can't vote in both, but you can claim to be
right,
a Republican or a Democrat.
Right, either have to be all Republican or all Democrat. Yeah.
Right. So the supporters of, let's say, Barack Obama.
Because apparently we have no other parties in
No, because this primary was pushed to the legislature from the Democrats and Republicans. They did not want anyone else involved, and that's why they didn't allow it to happen. And even the state legislature, and Lessenberry wrote about this last week, they are allowing, if you do vote as a Republican or a Democrat, then your name and address is immediately made known to the Democratic and Republican parties that you voted then. And originally, lower courts in Michigan had said, you can't spend public money actually to generate a list of supporters that you can then go back to and hit for dollars. That $17 million is what this primary in Michigan is costing the state of Michigan.
Yeah, meanwhile, our state is just on a down spiral to poverty.
Well, Lessenberry talked about this last week.
But
people can go to metrotimes.com and read his comments from last week on that, and I agree with him, too.
But we have $17 million spent on a primary election.
It's a fraud. It's only to help publicize the Dems and Republicans. The other part, no other parties are involved. They don't have any candidates. They will have candidates, and in fact, they probably would get them going earlier in Michigan if they would have been allowed access to this primary. It's just a primary that was set up by the Dems and the Republicans, and to give them further publicity, in fact, not only for their candidates, but for their parties, so that any other party won't even get an equal status, because we haven't heard about any other parties since all this ridiculous primary pre-debates have started months ago. And I don't see much Democratic purpose in month after month of sound bites. Again, I don't know what any of these people think in detail, and you won't find it out. You didn't find it out here in Dearborn. I mean, I knew that Mitt Romney had better hair. Okay, I found that out. But I don't know what he really believes in depth at length. It was interesting to hear his whole speech about faith and so on. I did listen to that, not just the sound bites, and I wasn't happy with that. I like John Kennedy's speech back in 1960 better. But oh well. So Mike Huckabee, I think he gave the Mormons a very unfair bad rap. However you consider one religion versus another, I do, and I'm going on record, it is my opinion. It should be a personal decision and choice. I would be suspicious of a Satanist for president. Yes, I do think that they should be open about their belief system and their knowledge and their own ethical standards. And sometimes if they are their standards are based on a particular religion, then yes, I guess they better explain more about that religion.
Yeah.
Like mine are just so complicated because they don't have an instant, religion. Well, you want to know what I think on things, just ask the Buddhists or something. That's not that easy, for me. And I would be,
That's not
nobody
that
would vote for me. Well, I don't know what he believes. I don't know what religion he is. Well, I'm not sure either. But I don't think, as John Kennedy said, it should be the first question you ask. What is your position on the issues of America now? What would you do? And whether it comes from your religion or your philosophies or other ethical bases, whether it comes from reading Soren Kierkegaard, one of my favorite philosophers, along with... what was his name? Wittgenstein. That'll challenge you there. Look it up, folks. But that's why I'm not going to run for president, because nobody will understand. I don't even understand Wittgenstein. Okay, much less Kierkegaard very well. So that's it. We spent a lot of time on this, but it's a local issue because the primary is coming up, because Lessenberry, a local opinion leader, has brought it up. And because Huckabee was here in town and I said he was the front runner to me just based on those sound bites, and he didn't even have the best hair, but I still liked him best as a real person.
But you really got to get over this hair thing.
Yeah, but I'm not even a Republican. I'm not even a dyed-in-the-wool Republican, and I thought he had the best chance. So I do think he's going to do real good in Iowa in terms of the caucus, and other people may want to vote for him for a number of reasons. And he's from Hope, Arkansas. So there you go.
I seem to be seeing and hearing a lot more about the Republican candidates than the Democratic.
Yeah.
Why would that be? Is it just because Hillary Clinton is the strongest one and that's that? Or
because who sponsors the debates? How is there a debate for these candidates? The Republican Party sets them up. How come the Republicans came to Michigan? Because Mayor O'Reilly asked them to come here and then provided various resources and facilities for probably nothing. And, of course, it brings business in it. So whoever asks, if the presidential primary candidates for that party want to go there, they go. So they've actually had more debates among Republicans that got on TV.
Okay, well, that would explain then why
because
I've
it's
been
just,
hearing more about
hey,
Republicans.
Let's go and, because it's instant publicity for them in that state, although here in Michigan they came. They only had two questions asked in the whole 2 hours about anything that would affect Michigan economy. And basically Fred Thompson and others said, there's no problem with the country's economics. Okay, Michigan's got hard times, but hey, nothing to worry about. Don't need to do anything in the country for Michigan because everything's good in the country. There's no reason to change things in the country just for Michigan. Well, I thought that was extremely anti-Michigan. I'm glad they came here to say that because I know I can't count on Republicans, if I voted for any, for president, doing anything about Michigan's economic problems because they were completely resistant to any thought that there's really a problem for anybody, and what's the problem in Michigan is just our problem. And, well, thank you, Fred Thompson and others. Nobody rose to give us any answers for what Michigan should do in any way, shape, or form, or that they give us, bailout money or whatever from the federal government. That's not a Republican thing. We'll also get some other issues, as long as you're here and excited by many things. Okay.
What do you got? What's next on the plate?
Well, I'm just looking at the papers. We always turn the pages to see what's going on here. There's a lot of Christmas things going on. And you should read the Times Herald and the Press and Guide locally, one of the few cities that has two papers, not controlled by the same company, and has different opinions on a variety of things. Frank Bewick thinks that one answer to the prison problem in his 30+1 column from last Sunday. He says, take the prisoners, the illegals that are in prison in some places for being in this country illegally, and it does cost us about $30,000 a year to keep someone imprisoned. That's what it costs.
I thought it was more than that.
Yeah, that's cheap, actually. Let's put a few more in jail. Anyway, Michigan's prisons are overpopulated anyway. I think percentage-wise, we have more people in prison in Michigan than any other state, too.
Well, we're the highest unemployed.
I don't know.
Are the correlation?
We're the fattest, too, in the country.
Yes, yeah. We're just like...
So I don't know what other... I don't know how these things tie in.
That's with child obesity as well. Uh-huh. We're like number one or number two or something.
Yep. Child obesity, yeah. Yep. Spread it down to the family.
Yeah.
Keep it in the family.
Our claim to fame, people.
Well, he says, take the prisoners.
Let's do something about that.
The ones who were already in jail and all the newly arrested and convicted and place them on a farm, with security guards, of course. But we could save a bundle there, have them grow their own food and eat what they grow. Not in winter, Frank. You're not going to get much food in winter. Well, I guess save it up and feed them in winter.
Well, they can live like, Inuits.
They can make them organic farmers here.
And
at the right time of year, take them to the fields that the illegals are now working and have them pick the crops. You say, well, we got to have illegal farmers because Americans won't pick the crops like in California or whatever, right? Or even Michigan, they're harvesting, quote-unquote, illegals. Immigrant populations still come here to do the apples and so on. It's an interesting idea, although I think managing that many people out in the open would cost even more than keeping them squeezed into a little cell. You obviously need many more guards to watch out for 1,000 people picking apples, But in any event, it says pay them what they now get paid in jail, just a couple of dollars a day. Then work a deal with the farmers whose farms they would work and have them review their prices based on this cheaper labor and pass these savings along the consumer, you and me.
How do people get paid being in jail?
Because they do work, like making license plates and things.
It's jail.
I know, but... it doesn't seem fair to take somebody who's a criminal and exploit them.
Sure, it does.
Well, of course it does. It does.
They exploited somebody's personal rights or violated laws. I'm not very kind to criminals.
As long as it's not really torture. If you remember Cool Hand Luke, that was a movie from the late 50s with Paul Newman in it. I mean, they were out on a road gang, you know, and they're basically breaking up big rocks into little rocks with sun and chains on and sweating and dying. So that was torture, really. That was a certain kind of torture.
Oh, I don't agree
as
with
described
torture.
There. No,
I don't agree with torture, but making license
not,
plates?
Not
hey,
torturous
I,
to make
debt,
a license
that's
plate.
That's a service, you
yes,
know,
it
a
is.
Debt to...
Right. And I agree with Frank, too. What's wrong with them having work out a plan to have them? And he says... You could even pay them a couple bucks anyway. I mean,
apparently we already do
something. Yeah, we already do. So why not have them do the work that the illegals have to come to this country to do? We've already got plenty of people in prison, especially in Michigan, to do some of this. And that's a very interesting idea. Always can count on Frank Bewick, who was here on the 30th, and you can get that interview, folks, online as a podcast from WHFR.fm. But he is someone to read each week and to think about his ideas. Not that he's always right. Certainly I'm not. But think of his ideas and
nobody
think it through.
Nobody is ever always right.
I mean, why can't some of these good ideas that come from even Jack Lessenberry and Frank Bewick and even me, how can they not get in the political system? How can our legislators not pay attention to new ideas that are a little different, might be a little controversial, but they might actually work better than the same old things?
They can't pay attention to anything that the voters don't pay attention to, Jay.
But leadership is supposed to direct the minds of people, too. Okay. All right. Well, we'll move on. But thank you, Frank, for that. It is a very interesting idea, and why not explore that? You know, winter is coming here in Michigan. You probably noticed. And Dearborn residents are continually being reminded of all the details of the snow plowing in the city. And we can't possibly go down these rules because actually in Dearborn there's too many. There really
yes,
are.
Yes, there's too
I
many.
I don't have time during the show to read
every.
Them.
Thing.
Yes.
As far as those kind
we
of
are ruled to
city
death
ordinances and things. And oh, wow.
Right.
Can I go through the list of how many tickets I've gotten?
First, I have to give credit to the city of Dearborn in this context because on last Friday's show, 1 to 2 p.m. now, I stated that Dearborn Heights was going to have another week for loose leaf pickup. They extended their time for people to get their leaves out front so they could be picked up. And that Dearborn had cut it off, and they had not extended it, and that I still had leaves on my street in my part of Dearborn. They were there for 3 weeks, piled up in
mm-hmm.
front. And when would they come? I said that last Friday. They came Saturday morning. So thank you, City of Dearborn. Were you listening to my show? Did you get we got to go and do Coronix leaves anyway. Cause
I don't like leaf pickup, actually. I don't
my recollection
I don't like
is,
that service. I think it's a waste
you know,
of tax.
Even they say the cutoff, I think, was the 30th of November, the end of November. It does take the city. I remember in past years, another week or so to come by and get that last group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does take them. It's not that it's cut off on the 30th and they pick them up instantly. So I don't want to say that we did. But I did say, Dearborn Heights is giving people extra time and City of Dearborn isn't. And why haven't we had our leaves picked up if that's a service? Now, personally, hey, I only have a small front yard. I turned my front yard into a forest slowly over the years, planting trees and bushes and ground cover. And I had a little small pile of leaves, but they were there in front, so I brush them to the curb. So I had just the smallest little pile. All my other leaves on the side and the back of my house, I put in trash barrels or in the paper bags and put them out front, which means they don't have to have the special crews collect them. It's just the same big trucks come and they just dump them in.
So,
I think everybody should do it that way. I don't think the city should pay for all these crews and all the trucks and all the street sweepers and scoopers. The loose leaf front collection is a problem in so many ways. It's one of those expenses the city shouldn't really have to do.
Yeah, and you know how many people have almost gotten into accidents from sliding on those leaves out in the road? They get wet. They become, there's a nickname for them called Dearborn Black Ice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if It was very dry and not rainy and wet like it is in Michigan, and all those leaves were piled up there, and somebody parks a car on top mm-hmm. because they take up the curb space. The exhaust, which is very hot, especially the catalytic converter, can set those afire.
Yeah.
And so it's a hazard in other ways. So
well,
I
my children's
I personally
elementary school.
Don't think we need to
no,
do
my
that.
My children's elementary school, during the leaf pickup days, okay, now I feel for the people who purchased their home, their home to be right next to the elementary school, but they pile these huge piles of leaves out into the street, and then you can't park to drop your kid off and take them into school. You can't, so people are trying to, four-wheel it on top of these leaf piles. It's just ridiculous. It's a waste of time.
Well, no. We have about, it depends on which watch and clock. We have about 5 minutes to go, and I wanted to conclude with another Mormon Tabernacle song. But not religious. It's on the album. It's actually their cover of an ABBA tune. Really sweet. It's one of my favorite little ballads. It's not a rock and roll thing. I can't imagine the Mormon Tabernacle doing rock and roll. But yeah. it's a sweet thing, and I'm going to conclude with that today in the spirit of the holidays. But here's the other issue, and maybe you saw this in the paper, that you're starting to remind people that if you have a fire hydrant in front of your home, folks, you must keep it yourself cleared of snow.
Yep.
You must go out there and shovel. Now, you probably know about the sidewalks thing. If you have a sidewalk, you must get out there within 24 hours and clear the sidewalk of snow.
I'm horrible about
that. Or they're
going to
give you a fine on that. Now, in my neighborhood, has no sidewalks.
Oh, see, I like sidewalks. I like sidewalks, but I'm horrible about that. I'll admit it. I am.
Well, I feel sorry for the
postman. I have a lot of sidewalk.
and I do. For the mail carrier who has to walk there every day, I make sure that my porch and my driveway, which they have to walk up the driveway, I have a little sliver that I shovel, and I put some rock salt down during the ice last week because those people, it's not, they shouldn't be risking their lives with every house. And in fact, legally, if your walk is too icy, they don't even have to come to deliver the mail.
Right, they don't have to.
So for their sake, and any people that might come to my house accidentally, as a guest, I don't want to be sued or something by them. But
what, your holiday party is?
The fire hydrant. I was thinking about that. I would rather have the fire department come and with a tanker truck or something and spray de-icer on my fire hydrant if I had one in front of my house. I would be, isn't the city firefighters afraid that somebody's going to smash into that with their fire? I mean, they're trying to get ice off. They start chipping away with their shovel and they break the fire hydrant.
You'd also think that would be an important safety factor, though, too, as far as, okay, so you can find somebody if they don't do it, but what if there's a fire and you have to do it and do it quickly and get to that fire hydrant and it's not shoveled off? Wouldn't that be a safety issue?
Yeah, it's a tough call. There's pros and cons here. We must have...
What if someone's gone for the week that it snows and there's a big pile on the fire hydrant outside in there? How are they supposed to clean up their fire hydrant?
If we have 20,000-plus households in Dearborn, now there's not a fire hydrant in front of each one of them, but for every 10... There must be maybe 400...
Isn't it 400, every 200? I thought it was every 200...
Feet, yards, or something.
200
yeah.
yards.
Well,
or something.
I'm guessing there's probably 400 to 500 fire hydrants, but it would seem to me that the fire department are the experts on removing snow and ice from fire hydrants. And I, rather than the leaf thing, if I had to make a tough call, of course, I know everybody loves getting the leaves picked up from the front of their house. That's so wonderful to most people.
No, actually, a lot of people don't. Most people I talk to also think it's a waste. They use the service because it's there. But most of them say they would not have any problem with just bagging the leaves and putting them out there.
If it's cold and icy out there, of course, if you've got to shovel your sidewalk, then why not just dig out your fire hydrant? But I think it'd be better for the firefighters to come by with some sort of non-toxic de-icer. Of course, that's a problem. If you spray your alcohol-based thing on their yard, then they're going to kill some plants or grass maybe. So I don't know.
I think we're...
Okay. Time to conclude. A lot of things to think about. It's a great holiday season. Next week, looking forward here, we should have a visit from Peace Action of Michigan. That's right. Mm. One of the spokespersons from Peace Action. Because I thought in the holidays, what a unique idea. Think about peace.
Yeah.
Since we don't seem to think about it at any other time or act on it. So we're going to have them with a special interview in person in the studios. So Kristen, thank you for coming by today on the new WHFR Journal.
And, yes.
Stay tuned now for Joanne Korchinska and Highway 61 coming right up for the Woo-hoo! Next 4 hours. Yes, this is WHFR Dearborn.
Go, Joanne. Get busy. Go, Joanne. Sorry.
She just can't stop being vocal, folks.
Well, you know, I got to get a whole minute in this hour, I think.
I know. Well, the CD player's gone to sleep.
You're all ready to talk.
See if I can wake it up here.
See, you even put the CD player to sleep. Look at that. I'm so mean. I'm sorry. I love you. Peace, love.